It's that time again, true believers.
What time is it?
Smash time! The Incredible Hulk's adventures will no longer be stifled and must be set free! A huge thank you to all who listened to our last show, which was not a Smash Tales, but our special tribute to Boisterous Bill Mantlow. And an even bigger thank you to those who sent in donations for Bill's care, along with correspondence to the Boisterous One. We've been away for quite a while, but it is neither the Colonel's fault nor mine, we swear! The staff here at the Smash Cave have been taking time off until they get a new collective bargaining agreement. No staff means no Smash Tales. But fortunately, all those unemployed NFL players are in the same boat, and as it turns out, the job requirements are very similar. And voila, we're back in business.
Holy nick of time.
When we last left the Green Goliath, he had been separated by Doc Samson into two separate beings. Bruce Banner, a completely normal, gamma radiation-free human, and then a mindless Jade Giant, with all the power of the Incredible Hulk, but without the moderating influence of Banner. Two separate beings. In order to save the Hulk from being exterminated by S.H.I.E.L.D., Doc Samson freed the Jade Giant, only to watch the brainless behemoth dish out murder and mayhem on the S.H.I.E.L.D. transport personnel. The mighty Avengers, both East and West Coast, intervened to bring the Hulk down, but were sidetracked by a raging Doc Samson, who now follows his own personal crusade to destroy the mindless Hulk and make up for his error in judgment. Meanwhile, the comatose Bruce Banner, watched over by Betty Ross and Jen Walters, the sensational She-Hulk, is successfully revived with an experimental treatment at Las Palomas Medical Center. Will Doc Samson succeed in taking down the Hulk? How long will the Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D. give him to achieve his goal? And what will Bruce Banner do now that he is free of the Hulk's curse?
Today's story encompasses the events from The Incredible Hulk numbers 317 and 318, both priced at 75 cents per issue, written and penciled by John Byrne, inked by Keith Williams, colored by Andy Yuccas, and lettered by Rink Parker, and also edited by Denny O'Neill. Today's Titanic tale introduces several new characters to the Hulkverse, and the wild ride that started since the Hulk's return from the crossroads isn't about to slow down. So fasten your seatbelts, especially those of you hoping for a spot on Bruce Banner's new team, because your patience is about to be rewarded.
This is Smash Tale!
You're probably wondering why I called you here today.
Mister, I don't know who y'all are, but you got a powerful way with an understatement. What is this place, and who are all these other folk?
Dr. Robert Bruce Banner sits in a high-tech gyroscopic wheelchair, still recovering from his physical separation from the gamma-irradiated tissues that comprise the Incredible Hulk. He is surrounded by five men and women who are all curious about their invitation to join this strange man at the recently recommissioned Gamma Base.
Yes, no doubt introductions are in order. Craig Saunders Jr., United States Army Corps of Engineers, retired. Demolition expert. Carolyn Parmenter, formerly with the New Atlantis Research Installation off the Florida Keys. Samuel J. Larroquette, also known as The Rock.
Finally!
Up until 6 weeks ago, under contract to Argo Industries.
Finally!
He has been to and survived almost every harsh, inhumane climate and terrain on this planet. Dr. Armand Martel, past president of the Xenobiology Foundation of Japan, and an expert on life forms both real and imagined. And last but most assuredly not least, Professor Hideko Takada, world-renowned expert on geophysical conditions, and a woman not above taking a few risks to prove a point. And as for me, I am Bruce Banner, the new head of Project Hulkbuster.
Hulkbuster? Hey, wait a minute. Ain't that the bunch that used to be out to destroy the Hulk?
But if you're Bruce Banner, you are the Hulk.
No, he isn't. It's been all over the network news. Banner was separated from the Hulk a few weeks back.
Was he? I have heard nothing of this, and I have no desire to involve myself in an elaborate plan to commit seppuku.
There is no suicide scheme here, Professor, I assure you. Mr. Larroquette is perfectly correct. Thanks to Dr. Leonard Samson, I am free of the Hulk.
And so you led the project created to annihilate him from one extreme to another, eh? If it were not for me, Dr. Martell, the Hulk would not exist in the first place. It was my invention of the world's first gamma bomb, leading to an accidental exposure to the massive levels of radioactivity released by its detonation that originally transformed me into the Hulk. In the years since that fateful day, my monstrous alter ego has systematically destroyed everything I have ever held dear, and in the process, done billions of dollars of property damage. Now he, it, must be destroyed. Hold on, let me get that. Hello?
That's a story we're all familiar with, Banner. But it don't explain why we're here.
I should have thought that would be obvious, Saunders. You are each of you experts in your highly eclectic fields. But more than that, you're not afraid of risk, of personal jeopardy. I have selected you to be my primary assault team. I want you to be my Hulkbusters.
You have got to be kidding.
This is most presumptuous, Banner-san. Why should we involve ourselves in your personal vendetta against the Hulk?
No reason, Professor Takata. Except, of course, the simple fact that you have no real choice. You're all haunted by bad luck, by tragedy. You're all at the ends of your tethers, without funding, without work. If you don't work for me, you don't work for anyone.
Meanwhile, off in the New Mexico desert, a solitary figure stands amidst the smoking ruins of what used to be a working cattle ranch. The superpowered psychologist, Doc Samson, surveys the area and brings a miniature audio recorder out of his pocket.
Log entry 327. It is obvious the Hulk came this way. It does not take an expert hunter to find or even follow his trail. Since leaving the more built-up areas a week ago, he has continued to grind a huge scar across the face of New Mexico. Nevertheless, there must have been some degree of intelligence, or at least some native cunning, still at work within his mind. He has managed to elude me time and time again since I interrupted his battle with the Avengers. Iron Man agreed to let me pursue the Hulk alone, to minimize the potential destruction of a pitched battle. But he also gave me a limited amount of time to stop the Hulk. That deadline is looming ever... Wait a moment. The Hulk! He must have doubled back, and was lying in wait for...
Unexpectedly, the Hulk rises from the rubble, only a few meters away from where Doc Samson is standing. The Green Goliath had been completely obscured, as though he was hiding, and is now only ready to make his presence known. He has no interest in letting Samson finish his log entry as he hurls a large boulder at the green-haired muscle man as fast as a Major League fastball.
Just barely dodged that, but I can't wait for the Hulk to get angry, or I'll have no chance of bringing him down. I've got to try to take him out as fast as I can.
Samson launches himself fist first and collides with the Hulk with a thunderous boom. Nearly instantaneously, the Hulk recovers from the assault and responds with a punch that sends Samson flying. The two Gamma Spawn powerhouses trade earth-shattering blows, neither with a clear advantage. Until the Hulk brings two massive fists down on each of Samson's shoulders, driving his legs down into the ground, followed by a roundhouse that topples Samson backward as his feet remain immobile. Before having a chance to recover his wits, the Hulk raises a 2-ton boulder above his head and squishes Samson underneath his enormous weight. At the same time, back at Gamma Base, Carolyn Parmenter strolls into the commissary for a private conversation.
Got a minute, Leverkat?
A minute, an hour, a day maybe. Don't none of us seem to be going anywhere.
No, Banner's really got us, hasn't he? We're all free to leave any time.
But if we did, where would we go? He was dead right about nobody else interested in hiring us anymore.
And here I was beginning to feel like I was the only one up that particular creek.
No, we all seem to have our deep, dark secrets. I know mine. I think I can guess yours. What did you want to talk to me about?
Banner's offer, of course, to become his new Hulkbusters. We've all been pretty good at staying alive in dangerous situations, but I think going toe-to-toe with the Hulk... Especially this particular Hulk sounds like pushing our luck too far.
That it does. I keep tossing it back and forth in my mind. We're all being handed a dandy chance to redeem ourselves, or an equally dandy chance of getting more than a little bit
dead.
Dead. It's gonna take some long, hard thought, this one.
And we will return right after
these messages. Cap's gonna star in a Broadway show, and maybe you can star with him.
If you're a girl between 10 and 14 who can sing, dance, and act up a storm, you might just be the person Cap's looking for. He needs a bundle of talent to play his very special friend in Captain America, a musical spectacular due to hit Broadway next spring. Interested?
Then send a photo and background info to Linda Watson, New York, New York.
Do it today. You wouldn't want to let Cap down.
Would you?
Mr. Turtle, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
I never made it without biting. Ask Mr. Owl.
Mr. Owl, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
Let's find out. One, two, three. Three.
How many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop? The world may never know.
Inspector Gadget enters his trusty time machine, pulls the lever, and...
Wow!
Will it be the wiles of prehistory, the terrors of ancient Rome, or will it be Gadget's greatest challenge ever?
4 o'clock, 3 central.
Through time, through space.
4 o'clock, 3 central.
I'll get you, Gadget. I'll follow you through time.
Will Gadget make it on time? Find out at exactly...
4 o'clock, 3 central.
I'll be right there.
Only on Nickelodeon.
Now return to The Amazing Spider-Man and The Incredible Hulk.
Back at the scene of the battle, the Incredible Hulk now stands motionless, perhaps a bit confused, as his foe lies buried underneath a boulder the size of a Buick. Staring at the large stone, the Hulk has no clue why his opponent no longer fights back. Doc Samson's mission to vindicate himself seems to have met a tragic end. But then, all of a sudden, the boulder bursts open with an explosive force as Samson escapes his rocky tomb and nails the Hulk with a surprise uppercut that staggers the behemoth.
Recess is over, Hulk. Back to work.
Samson's miraculous recovery catches the Hulk completely off guard. His attack is so ferocious and punches so relentless that it seems that with blow after earth-shattering blow, this contest is as good as won. Meanwhile, back at Gamma Base...
I feel it's important that I maintain this diary, keeping a record of all my emotions, all my feelings, in my own hand. It helps me remember who I am and what I have become. It's hard to believe that I'm finally free. I almost hesitate to say it for fear of waking up to find out this has all been some sort of dream. For the first time since the Gamma Bomb, I am Bruce Banner and only Bruce Banner. I owe so much to those who have labored on my behalf to bring about this miracle. To Samson, to Dr. Fisher, and to my cousin Jennifer, and to Betty. She has meant so much to me over the years. I think I must have loved her from the first moment we met when I started work on the Gamma Bomb. She was so unexpected, like some exquisite flower blooming out here in the desert. And I was so shy, so afraid to tell her what I felt, so terrified of rejection. And now, after so many long years, she has come back to me. But what can I do? This is no place for her. Not here, not now. We will all be in deadly danger when we at last face the Hulk. I cannot expect her to submit herself to that ordeal. And yet, without her, my life will become empty and meaningless once again. There is only one answer, of course, and yet to do it may prove the most difficult task I have ever faced. God grant me the strength I need.
The battle in the barren New Mexico desert has raged for a full 6 hours, and neither side is showing signs of tiring. Doc Samson displays incredible stamina in this Herculean effort, for his strength, while greater than almost any other human, is equal only to that of the Hulk in a calm state. At the peak of battle, the Hulk is quite angry. And as we all know, the madder the Hulk gets, the stronger the Hulk gets. The trading of blows is abruptly interrupted, however, as the Green Goliath rips up the ground and sends Samson flying with an erupting cascade of dry earth. At the rocks and sand bury the green-haired hero. Samson is lost from sight. Moments later, he digs his way up to the surface, ready to begin the battle anew.
Okay, let's try that one more.
Blast! He's flying off, taking one of those thousand league leaps of his. Once I stopped fighting back, he must have lost interest. He might come down in a populated area, which could mean hundreds of lives. Alright, Hulk, I'm coming after you again. You better be ready for me, because next time we meet is gonna be the last.
Gamma Base.
Bruce, what are you doing out of your chair? Dr. Fisher warned you.
I'm alright, Betty. I just needed to stretch my legs a bit.
But you're still terribly weak from the ordeal of being separated from the Hulk. You gotta take care of yourself.
I am. Let's not get into that right now, Betty. I have something I need to say, and if we get sidetracked, I may never summon up the courage to try again. Betty, you know how important our relationship has always meant to me, how much I've come to need you as part of my life, how utterly decimated I'd be if something happened to you here because of this project. But still, I have to ask you.
No, Bruce, please don't. Don't ask me to leave. I just couldn't. Not now. Not after.
No, Betty. No, I'm not going to ask you to leave. Not ever. I'm asking you, Betty, I'm asking you to marry me.
And now, these messages.
The power of the universe can be yours. Deep within the heart of the universe grow brilliant, soft-edged crystals called space tubes.
Suspended in the velvet rain of each cosmic wand float tiny suns, moons, stars, and planets, which dance and swirl at your command. Let your dreams and imagination run wild as you watch the colorful celestial bodies drift endlessly through space. Each space tube is made of 12 inches of highly durable, clear acrylic plastic, individually handmade especially for you. Before darkness, place your space tube near a light and watch the magical crystal particles glow with energy into the night.
Yes, I want to be the first in my neighborhood to have my own space tube. Enclosed is my check or money order for $4.95 plus $1 postage and handling payable to Rosa Enterprise, Pacific Grove, California. My satisfaction is guaranteed or else my money's coming back.
Oh, yes, the power of the universe can be yours with space tubes.
Space tubes.
Stay with me. I'm on you like glue.
All right. Hi, guys. Can I skate with you?
Nah, you're just a girl.
Power glide.
Aren't you jumping to conclusions? Let her try. You might be surprised.
Okay, but...
Thanks.
Wow, look at that. All right.
Remember, don't judge people till you give them a chance.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
The Transformers.
Oh, Pac-Man, I'm beat!
And I'm hungry!
Thank goodness for new Pac-Man pasta from Chef Boyardee.
New Pac-Man pasta?
Mmm, little spaghetti shaped like us.
Delicious!
And because Chef Boyardee is packed with goodness, it's great for when we have to eat and run!
New Pac-Man pasta from Chef Boyardee. With meatballs? Without meatballs? A chicken flavor.
Thank goodness for new Pac-Man pasta!
Thank goodness for Chef Boyardee.
Two weeks later, it's high noon in the New Mexico desert, and a figure clad in red leather descends from the sky. It's Dr. Leonard Sampson, engaged in his obsessive pursuit of his prey.
There, he's not where I expected him to be, but there's the Hulk.
While not as powerful as the Jade Giant, Doc Sampson possesses enough gamma-fueled stolen strength from the Hulk years ago that allow him now to leap miles and miles at a time. Without much effort, Sampson alters his trajectory, despite the laws of physics, and lands right upon the Hulk with a senses-shattering stomp. A jaw-cracking right hook follows, and Sampson knows how quickly the Hulk recovers from even the mightiest of blows. Without giving any pause, a left uppercut staggers his foe, and a jab to his stomach knocks him backwards as a double-fisted punch knocks the Hulk completely off his feet and flat on his back. While his body lays twitching on the hot desert sands, it is then that Doc Sampson notices something wrong. A mechanical face and body has been revealed under the torn green skin.
What in the... It's not the real Hulk. It some kind of machine? A training robot, Samson. Our training robot. Who? Sorry, Doc. No time for one-on-one introductions. You can just call us the Hulkbusters. Hit him.
Samson looks up to see a large mechanical bipedal vehicle bearing down upon him. Behind the cockpit windows, we can see four members of the group that Dr. Banner assembled as recruits for tracking down and destroying the Hulk. Craig Saunders, Carolyn Parmenter, Samuel J. LaRoquette, and Armand Martel operate the controls of this beastly battle machine, which now fires a powerful beam of energy at the ground, which Doc Samson just barely evades.
Whoa, ease up, Saunders. That's the Phalanx Disruptor Beamer popping off there. So, no point in mincing around with the power levels, LaRoquette. Doc Samson's almost as tough as the Hulk himself.
The machine brings one of its enormous legs up and tries to stop the gamma goo right out of Samson.
No time to judge. Amazing. I would never have expected the machine like this to be so nimble. Remind me to be impressed later.
With that, Samson lifts the foot off the vehicle, up off of him, and the immense thrust puts the vehicle off balance.
Look out, we're going over.
He-Man will be back right after these messages.
At last! The second spectacular G.I. Joe yearbook.
64 pages of non-stop, all-out action.
You get behind-the-scenes details on the G.I. Joe TV series.
A pictorial update on the entire G.I. Joe saga.
Plus, a never-before-published adventure by Larry Hama and Michael Golden featuring the G.I. Joe vs. Cobra and the October Guard.
G.I. Joe!
In the ring.
In the air.
Out of control.
WWF WrestleMania from NES.
Eight-man mayhem.
Did you see that?
Hulkamania, brother.
Choose from six superstars.
Unbelievable combat.
No holds barred. Anything goes action.
It's a slugfest.
Two wrestlers in the ring, brother.
Kick from anywhere.
Total chaos.
Punch in two directions.
Complete mayhem.
Run at your opponent.
Amazing.
Spinnerama.
Double bumble.
WWF WrestleMania for NES.
I inject steroids into my balls, brother.
Thinking about a new car? Then check out 1985's Car of the Year. This year, kid has more amazing features and more incredible powers than ever. And September 30th, you can see them all.
I can't wait.
If you can't wait, call 1-900-210-KITT and find out more.
Michael?
Easy, buddy.
And now, back to Voltron, Defender of the Universe.
Carolyn! Activate Mode 2!
Way ahead of you, Rocky! Let's show the good doctor what this baby can do!
Finally!
The vehicle splits into two halves, one consisting of the legs portion with LaRoquette and Saunders, who helm the primary weapons. The other is a hovering capsule containing Carolyn and Armand, which now sets its sight on Doc Samson.
Armand! Activate the screamers!
I've already done so! Voila!
What the?
Yow!
From both left and right sides of the capsule, rotating devices pop out and begin spinning rapidly, creating two streams of hypersonic disruptor energy, slicing up the desert floor like a hot knife through butter.
Obviously intended for use against the real Hulk's near-indestructible hide, but I'm nowhere near as indestructible as he is. That thing could kill me. Alright. If these people want to play that kind of hardball, I can do the same.
Ripping a large boulder from the ground, Samson throws it at his ground-based enemy and knocks out one of their legs, sending the machine careening down to the ground.
Blast it! I told Banner the Walker mode would be too vulnerable!
Carolyn, circle back! We must cut Samson off from the others!
10-4, Armand, but I think we may have been too quick to count them out!
Despite being unable to rise, the Walker's weapon systems work just fine, and they let loose with a volley of blasts that Doc Samson easily evades with one of his mighty leaps.
Looks like Terra Firma isn't such a safe place to be at the moment. Let's see what happens if I carry this fracas skyward.
Carolyn, he's jumping right at us!
Saunders, what in blue blazes are you doing? Our guns are tracking the hovercraft!
Don't sweat it. Samson ain't in a good position for me hopping around up there. Just give me a second and can fix the old bugger, and we'll blow him straight to blast!
Saunders fires right at Samson, but expecting the attack, he leaps away at just the last second, leaving the energy blast to strike the hull of the hovercraft, which then comes crashing down to the ground in flames. Doc Samson then rushes to the wreckage and rips open the vehicle, despite being engulfed in a fiery inferno. He pulls Armand to safety.
There's still someone in there. A woman. Flames. Too intense for me. But I've got to get through.
But then the fire reaches the fuel cells and erupts the entire craft in a cataclysmic explosion.
Kabam! Carolyn!
Lauriquet leaps from his disabled walker and throws his helmet to the ground, racing toward the flaming wreckage of the hovercraft. As he arrives to the edge of the flames, he is just barely caught by his co-pilot, Saunders.
Don't be a fool! You'll die too! Let go of me, blast you! Let go of me, I got to... No!
His advance is halted by the emergence of the charred yet alive form of Doc Samson, the man he's just spent the last 20 minutes trying to kill.
Samson, you son of a... Easy! Your friend is right, son. The woman, she's beyond help now.
No! No, you bloody... I'll kill you! I'll kill you!
Hey!
The enraged man swings wildly in his grief. Doc Samson easily evades the blows, but his patience quickly comes to an end.
Don't get tough, big man. You're just not in my league.
A simple push of Samson's hand is more than enough to send Lauriquet flying backward several meters to land in his posterior.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have more important fish to fry. The real Hulk. He's just flying off. Like nothing even happened here. Man, oh man, is that boy obsessed.
Obsessed? Saunders, you haven't even seen obsession yet. That man was just responsible for the death of a woman I cared for very much. Okay, so now that he's gone after the Hulk again, well, we're after the Hulk too. That means our paths will cross again. And when they do, I promise you Leonard Samson is going to pay in full.
Back at Gamma Base, Betty Ross is just finishing her workout in the gymnasium.
Ah, good afternoon, Miss Ross. I did not realize there was anyone else in here. I am sorry to have disturbed you.
Oh, you're not disturbing me, Professor Takata. I was just... thinking.
It is a good day for thought. Out there, somewhere in the great desert, my fellow Hulkbusters battle together for the first time. One only play-acting... against a robot of our true adversary, yet still a shadow of the real dangers that lie ahead when we at last face the Hulk.
That's not really what I'm talking about. I am worried about what happened to the Hulkbusters, yes. But what's really on my mind is, well, 2 weeks ago, Bruce asked me to marry him.
Wonderful! My congratulations! This is something you have desired for many years, right?
Yes, but I don't know how to respond, Hideko. Bruce and I nearly got married once before. The Hulk destroyed our plans. Since then, I've been through so many changes in my life. I've been turned upside down and inside out so many times that I hardly know where I stand anymore. I went on kind of a quest, Hideko. I went out into the world, away from Bruce, away from my father. I went in search of myself. And what I found, I didn't like very much. But I must make a decision. The most important decision of my life. And it has to be the right one. It has to be.
Trust your heart, Betty, and I'm sure it will be.
Bruce Banner studies his latest scientific findings within his high-tech laboratory. The physicist is so hard at work, he is quite startled when he turns to see Betty entering the room. His surprise combines with excitement, however, as he sees her approaching him with a quite serious look on her face. She has an answer for him. Despite being a long way from full recovery, he forces himself to rise from his wheelchair and quickly stumbles on the way to meet her. Reaching out his trembling hands to meet hers, they join together, and she brings her hands up to his face, looks deeply into his eyes, and replies,
"Yes."
To be continued. Bullpen Bulletins features Editor-in-Chief Jim Shooter wishing the entirety of Marveldom a happy holiday season. Since he was extra good this year, here are some of the highlights of his wish list for Jolly Saint Nick. Number 1.
A castle like Dr. Doom, so that he can say his house is almost as big as John Burns.
Number 2.
A hammer like Thor's to use for making fine adjustments on certain members of the creative staff.
Number 3.
A tight-fitting hat. Like the one Magneto used to wear, to keep his head from swelling when he reads fan mail.
Number 4.
Steel hard skin like Luke Cage's for when the occasional hate letter comes in from the occasional irate fan or competitor.
And number 5.
100 pairs of stretch socks.
I'm sure you got at least one of those. Before we get to the letters pages, we'd like to thank those who contributed to the Bill Mantlow tribute episode. You all know Marvel Noise's resident cosmic entity, Steve Raker. So thanks a ton, Steve, for your thoughts on Bill Mantlow's work, especially ROM Space Knight, which I'm reading in its entire run on my current reading pile. Gary and Miller also provided some great content, so thank you, Gary, for your take on The Hulk, Spectacular Spider-Man, and other titles Bill worked on. You can find Gary, who is always a wealth of great information, all over the web. He just recently interviewed Greg Pak about his upcoming departure from The Incredible Hulk on his ever-entertaining blog, the all-new, all-daring Delusional Honesty, found at delusionalhonesty.com.
Plug.
Gary also co-hosts the Spectacular Spider-Cast, which is one of the more entertaining shows in the Deliberate Noise family.
Plug.
Plug. Lastly, I want to thank the talented scripter David Gallagher, who gave us his 2 cents on Mantlow's work, too. David is one of the biggest Bill Mantlow fans out there, which is obvious if you've read Dark Star and the Winter Guard from Marvel, which is collected in trade at your local comic store or in instocktrades.com.
Plug.
I loved his work with artist Steve Ellis on this title, as well as on Box 13 from Boom Studios. But if I have to recommend a single item by David Gallagher, it's High Moon, which has werewolves and the occult and the Old West. Perfect combination. Pretty amazing, and it does have a collected first volume that you can find at the ongoing story arc at highmooncomic.com. Thanks again, all of you.
Plugging is done.
Greetings, Hulkamaniacs. This is Gary Miller, owner of the blog at delusionalhonesty.com and co-host of the Spectacular Spider-Cast and all-around Hulk fan, bringing you some thunderous thoughts on The Incredible Hulk number 317 and 318. We've got a lot of gamma goodness to hit on in a little time, so keep up, true believers. Now, issue 317 introduces Bruce Banner's very own Hulkbusters and a new gamma base, risen from the ashes of the old one, which was demolished by the UFOs in issue 277. This lineup is noteworthy for 2 reasons. Samuel John Larroquette and Craig Saunders Jr. While most of the team is long since forgotten, Sam and Craig would later rise to prominence as they fell under the thrall of the Lethal Leader during Peter David's tenure and became Rock and Redeemer, respectively. I'm guessing you'll hear about them in a future episode of Smash Tales. Issue 317 and 318 show 2 debates, with the first showcasing the would-be Hulkbuster's decisions to join Banner on his vendetta against the now mindless Hulk, while the second focuses on Betty and her decision on whether to join Banner on a different kind of sojourn into the human heart. All the while, the only superpowered protagonist is Doc Samson, who delights in chasing after the mindless Hulk like Wile E. Coyote pursued that Roadrunner fella. Will he ever learn? Not while John Byrne scripts his adventures, he won't. But in 318, he pays the price with the inadvertent death of Larroquette's ex-lover, new Hulkbuster Carolyn Parmenter. Of interest in 318 are a few details. While images of the Hulk are everywhere, including holographic projections, one of which foreshadows old Greenskin's upcoming metamorphosis to a gray Goliath, and a robot, complete with torn purple pants, the Hulk never actually appears in this story. It's only the second time since 1962 that the Hulk's original incarnation had been shown as gray. Even reprints through the mid-1980s recolored the Hulk as green in that first issue. By the way, Smash Tales fans, if you can name the previous issue where the Hulk was shown as gray, consider yourself owner of a limited edition Smash Tales No Prize. It is all right if I do that, right, Rick? Anyway, if Byrne had continued to tell the Hulk's adventures, it's fun to note he would likely be a very different character today. For more insights, you can catch my blog series, John Byrne and the Hulk That Might Have Been, only at delusionalhonesty.com. Grab the links from the Smash Tales Facebook page today. Thanks for listening. Back to you, Rick. Excelsior!
Gammagrams!
Yay!
Goes through a traumatic transformation in these issues, becoming Green Mail. These letters offer a good amount of feedback on the new writer-artist, Mr. John Byrne. First, John DiLiberto of New Paltz, New York, writes,
"Hooray! It's okay to read The Incredible Hulk again. To keep it that way, may I suggest more Doc Samson with a new costume? Please, that leather doesn't work out. A larger human supporting cast, including the return of S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Clay Quartermain, and different colored slacks for Bruce Banner. I understand that you don't plan to use any of the old Hulk enemies, except Abomination and then Metal Master. Well, I strongly suggest that you add the Gremlin and Cyclops to that list, because I feel they have great untapped potential. My new villain suggestions are Eunice, Knucklo, Despair, Sabretooth. Wait, I thought it was... Sabretooth, Blastar, Ulick, and the Wrecking Crew. Good luck, John, and don't disappoint me.
Todd Erickson of Roseville, Minnesota offers a few sarcastic comments.
Oh, fine. Hulk 314 comes out. Big deal. Some dumb old intriguing plots and subplots, a mundane, fantastic brawl between green skin and green hair, boring, out-of-this-world artwork. Yeah, typical John Byrne. Keep it up.
And finally, Matt Ombon of Yorkville, California, makes one simple request.
In my time of comic book reading, my three favorite titles have been X-Men, The Incredible Hulk, and most recently, Alpha Flight. With you, I've experienced the deaths of Phoenix and Guardian, two of my favorite characters. They now tell me you are coming to the Hulk. Ah! I just have two things to say. One, welcome aboard. Two, and I stress this, don't kill the Hulk! Thank you for your time.
And with the upcoming nuptials, the Smash team thought we might point out the noteworthy weddings up until this point in Marvel history. Reed Richards and Sue Storm of the Fantastic Four were married in October 1965, which became notorious for Stan Lee and Jack Kirby being portrayed in the issue as being denied entrance to the wedding of the very characters which they created. Avengers Henry Pym and Janet Van Dyne were married next in 1969, January, which is noteworthy because Pym was suffering from schizophrenia at the time, believing himself to be the cocky Yellow Jacket, completely separate as an entity from Henry Pym. From a certain perspective, that's a little bit like Betty Ross marrying the Hulk instead of Bruce Banner. Later on, we got weddings with Namor and Dorma, Quicksilver and Crystal, but the most interesting is an ex-wedding. Scott Summers and Madeline Pryor tied the knot in November 1983, a scant 13 months before Bruce and Betty's wedding. The woman who would turn out to be a clone of Jean Grey, Madeline Pryor captured the heart of the founding X-Men and bore him a baby boy, Nathan Christopher Scott Summers.
Really bad day.
Quite uncharacteristically for a superhero, Cyclops grew distant from his wife and son and abandoned them once he learned that Jean Grey was alive once more. After much betrayal, heartbreak, and deception, the child played a major role in the climax of the X-Men event Inferno, before he was taken 2,000 years into the future to grow up as a warrior who returned to the time of his birth as the X-Men called...
Cable. One of our commercials this episode features an opportunity for talented young people to try out for a stage performance of Marvel's Star-Spangled Avenger. In 1985, a musical about Captain America was announced for Broadway. Written by Mel Mandel and Norman Sachs, the show never premiered, although recordings of the score have surfaced. If any of you front-facers can track down these tunes and post them on the forum, the Smash team will find some way of expressing our extreme appreciation.
For sheer pulsating power, for mile-a-minute non-stop action, you can bet your greenest gamma rays nothing on Earth can beat the Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah!
Coming your way soon, we got ourselves a wedding!
Blue Blazes, we got ourselves a wedding.
There's no time to lose. Gotta call the caterer, the florist. Send out all those invites. There's tuxes to rent.
Gowns to buy.
How will we ever get it all done in time? Oh, wait a minute. Hey, unemployed NFL players, I got some extra chores until the next episode. And as for you listeners, you're all cordially invited as Robert Bruce Banner and Elizabeth Ross are joined in... Well, let's just hope this thing goes without a hitch, true believers. Get some film loaded in your camera. Bring a pocket full of rice. Shine up your dancing shoes. And practice your wedding toast. And for this ceremony, it's BYOB! And, spoiler warning, it's also the return of a major character in the Hulk's life. Well, maybe more than one. But the only hint that we're giving you is that his middle name is Milhouse.
And we're not telling you anything about the other one.
Until next time, Smash fans, I'm Rick Hansen.
And I'm Rainbow Dash.
And we'll see you at the chapel! Fare thee well!
Can a werewolf battle a man clad in solid silver and survive? That was the tagline on the cover of Werewolf by Night number 32, featuring the first appearance of one of my favourite and also one of the most underutilised characters in the Marvel Universe, Moon Knight. Hi, my name is Andrew Shaw, coming to you all the way from Melbourne, Australia. With the recent relaunch of Moon Knight by Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev, I thought I would take the time to go over some of the history of and some of the reasons I like the character of Moon Knight. I hope that my Australian accent doesn't throw you off too much. David had suggested possibly using subtitles, and that by the end of this segment, you have at least a better idea and some interest about Mark Spector. Born the son of an American rabbi, Mark Spector spent his adult years as a heavyweight boxer and US Marine, before finding his calling as a mercenary. During this time, he meets the person who will become a lifelong friend, Jean-Paul Duchamp, or Frenchie to his mates. While in Egypt, the pair also meet a person who would plague Spector for many years to come, Raoul Bushman, completing mercenary work for him. During a mission, the trio stumble upon an archaeological dig, which has unearthed a temple of worship dedicated to the god of vengeance, Khonshu. The dig is led by Dr. Peter Alrain and his daughter Marlene. Bushman has the idea to loot the site, killing Dr. Alrain in the process. Spectre doesn't like this and challenges Bushman to combat, getting almost beaten to death in the process. Mark Spector, near death, is found by a roaming band of Egyptians who take him to the temple and lay him in front of a statue of Khonshu. Left there by the tribe, Mark Spector's heart stops. Khonshu appears before him in a vision, offering him a second chance if he becomes the god's avatar on Earth. Spectre agrees. He awakens and wraps himself in a silver shroud that had been draped around the statue and confronts Bushman, this time defeating him. Mark returns to America with Marlene, Frenchie, and the statue of Khonshu, and begins his career as a crime fighter, the Fist of Khonshu, the Lunar Legionnaire, Moon Knight. Debuting in Werewolf by Night number 32, written by Doug Munch, art by Don Perlin in August 1975, Moon Knight was a hit with fans, prompting Marvel to grant him a two-issue solo adventure in Marvel Spotlight number 28 and 29. Appearances in several comics, including Spectacular Spider-Man, a Marvel team-up issue, and The Defenders led to a backup in Hulk magazine, and finally, in 1980, 5 years after his debut, The Fist of Khonshu was finally granted his first solo ongoing title. Marvel has given Moon Knight several goes at ongoing titles, the longest lasting 60 issues, the shortest only 6. The powers in charge always seemed like they had big things to Spectre, what with all the books released and the talk of a TV series at one time, but he just never seemed to catch on. Being a street level character with three different identities, Mark Spector, Jake Lockley, a taxi driver with his ear to the streets, and millionaire entrepreneur Stephen Grant, and with Marvel having a list of already big street-level characters like Daredevil, Spider-Man, and the debut of the Punisher the year earlier, Moon Knight seemed to get lost in the shuffle. Marvel has even tried throwing all-star artists and writers like Doug Munch, Bill Sienkiewicz, Ron Garney, Stephen Platt, David Finch, Chuck Dixon, Mark Teixeira, J.M. DeMatteis, Sal Velludo, and also the recent team of Bendis and Maleev at the character, but nothing has seemed to hold the fans' attention for long. My favourite team on the book has been Munch and Sienkiewicz on the original run. I just think Sienkiewicz's art works so well for the character, with all the darks and shadows, and Doug Munch, having created the character, has what in my opinion is the best handle. Also a big fan of Sal Velludo's run, even recently purchasing an original Moon Knight page of his. So why is Moon Knight relevant? Is he just Marvel's version of one of the distinguished competitions trinity? I think Moon Knight has a different agenda. He's out for vengeance, to make up for his past as a mercenary. He needs redemption, and this is the only way he can think of to atone for his sins. I think the move to LA in the Bendis Helm new series is a good thing for him. Get Moon Knight away from the other heroes, out from under the capes and cowls of other people, that would take the spotlight away and have him take on the villains of Tinseltown. Although having said getting him out of the capes and cowls of other people is probably a bit ironic if you have actually read the new series. I've always liked the different identities aspect, and I don't see it as a split or multiple personality disorder. I see it as characters an actor might play, or an undercover cop might take on an identity to infiltrate some kind of drug cartel or gang. He has a great and very interesting rogues gallery. The Profiler is a fascinating villain, having the possibly mutant ability to divine people's backgrounds, seeing their innermost secrets. He was very prominent during the what started as the David Finch run. Also, Morpheus, named after the god of dreams. The character has a power called Ebon Energy, which builds due to lack of sleep on his part, and the ability to induce nightmares in people through telekinesis. My favourite villains of Spectres were Randall, the Hatchet Man, introduced during his early Hulk magazine appearances, and I won't spoil who he actually is, and Stained Glass Scarlet, who is the subject of my favourite storyline, Scarlet Redemption, which I may cover in a later episode down the track if you enjoy this segment. I think there is a place for Moon Knight in the Marvel Universe. I don't see him ever being an A-list character, holding his own with Thor and Iron Man, but I do believe he is on the same level as Daredevil and the Punisher. He just hasn't had the chance to shine with an event linked to his past. Moon Knight is a fascinating character, with an excellent supporting cast. I do believe he has been mishandled in the recent past, but I also think with the right talent on board there could be hope for him yet. I've seen that the comic recently is selling well, but I also think this is because of Bendis and Maleev, the big names on the book, rather than the actual character. It would excite me more if the sales were because of the storyline, not the actual talent. He's hoping that while Bendis is on the book, he takes a real shine to the character and decides to use him later on for different events and maybe even a further title down the track, or keeping the current title going. I'd love to be able to see a title get to its 100th issue rather than stopping at 60 or even not lasting more than 6. It's always a worry when a new Moon Knight series is announced. It's always a worry to see how far it will actually go. The last, or the most recent one before the Bendis one, really was plagued by troubles of just lackluster stories, and the art sort of died off a little bit after Fincher's run, but, you know, really, who can keep up with David Fincher these days? The Hefto Paolo stuff at the end was really nice, but the storyline was a bit lackluster. It's probably stuff that I will go into further, hopefully down the track, if this segment does take off a little bit. He has seemed like a character that Marvel has wanted to put a bit of work into. He's been used in several Marvel video games, like Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1. He was in Spider-Man or Web of Shadows as a non-playable character, but you could get help from him. There was even talk of a TV show at one stage. Unfortunately, that never got off the ground. He is mentioned in the Blade TV series as a Dr. Mark Spector, who is an expert on werewolves, which is sort of a bit of an in-joke to say that he did debut in Werewolf by Night all those years ago. There's also been many different versions of the character over the years. He's been in the Ultimate Universe by Bendis again. He was in House of M. He's been in Marvel Zombies, even a character like him in Universe X. So I guess it's more the fans than Marvel. Marvel must absolutely love the character, whereas he just doesn't seem to take off with the fans, seeing him more like a character from across the road at the other company. I do see that the parallels are there, but as I said before, they are different in that regard, and I think David did mention it on 11 o'clock comics last week that Black Panther is probably more the Marvel Batman. So that's all from me. Hopefully my talk has enlightened you a little bit more on the character of Mark Spector or Moon Knight. Thanks for listening to me ramble on about one of my favourite characters. If you'd like to hear more about Moon Knight, please leave me some feedback in the Marvel Noise episode thread. I'd love to hear from you. Any other suggestions, anything you'd like to hear about the character, or just comments, queries, worries in the world. Or you can follow me on Twitter. It's at Andrew_Shaw, SHAW23, where I don't really tweet a whole lot, but I mostly retweet a lot of other people's art. Thanks again for the opportunity, David, and hopefully I'll see you guys soon. Bye.